It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 92% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
We have to do a check-in about how where your
I
status
like
is.
To hear how I'm doing, you know?
Well, lately you've been calling me and making us do this earlier and earlier, so I think that rises your stock.
Yeah, there you go.
This morning I wasn't even willing to do it as early as right. you were.
Which is a first.
You called me and said 10, and I went 11.
Because you have an infant.
I have an infant who apparently got his hands on a gallon of cranberry juice and a carpet today. So that was my morning. So I'm on my second cup of coffee. But the last couple of weeks, as this runs, there's a lot going on. So this actually might not run for a little while. But we were just talking about DC. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about DC's Rebirth program. And there was an event. Recently,
yeah, I guess this was the fifth or sixth one in the nation they've done. They're Dan Dito and Jim Lear and their marketing department and their advertising department, which might be the same department, is running around to five or six major cities across the country and doing like 4-hour long presentations about Rebirth and what it is and what's coming.
This is open to retailers.
It's for retailers, yeah. So the idea is they give the retailers a heads up on what's coming without spoiling anything. They give us as much as they can so that we'll take that back to the stores and give it to our customers.
And then know what to order.
Right. Unfortunately, our orders were due Thursday night, this past Thursday, which would have been the... Do you know what date that is?
I don't know. This is going to run like 2 weeks from now. Who cares about
dates?
All right.
Well, it was due on a Thursday, and the event we went to was the exact same Thursday night. So we placed orders for all this crap. Right before the event.
And what were the orders for all the number ones?
Yeah. So it's all the Rebirth number ones, all the new number ones, with all the new creative teams, all the new artists and writers coming on all the books. And I got to say, when they announced Rebirth a couple months ago, I was like... Fuck, again, you guys are like, they have no idea what they're doing as a company.
Yeah, we had a podcast on that like last month when they announced it.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't seem good.
It just seemed like another new 52.
Right. And
like, let's put out a bunch of number ones and try to get that sales spike we got 5 years ago.
Yes, and that was my concern. And going to this event, listening to Dan Dito and Jim Lee give their presentation, I actually feel really, really good about this DC Rebirth
really?
Stuff. Yeah.
Well, what did they tell you that you didn't expect?
Well, the big thing that that kind of reassured me was they're getting away from 52 ongoing monthly titles and scaling the line back to like 30-some titles. The idea being when you're watching 52 monthly books run off in a direction, a lot of them lose their way. And one of the things we talked about at the, you know, they opened it up to questions, and we had said, hey, look, I told him, like, I like Teen Titans. I read Jeff Johns run on Teen Titans. I like the book. I like the characters. I haven't been able to read a monthly Teen Titans comic in probably like 8 or 9 years. That's how far off it is from...
And it's Cartoon Network's biggest show. So
right.
there's such
and,
a franchise there.
Yeah, they're doing more interesting stuff with like Young Justice. Those kinds of shows are so much more interesting and recognizable than the Teen Titans show or the Teen Titan comic has been in years.
There's a big rumor right now, not to derail the Rebirth conversation, there's a big rumor
that
right
Young
now
Justice
that...
Young Justice is coming back on
as a Netflix show, yeah, for
yeah,
season 3.
I keep hearing it. I keep asking people if it's confirmed. People are telling me mixed things, so...
Greg, I saw yesterday Greg Wiseman, who ran Young Justice.
Yeah.
And I was not a big fan of Young Justice. I felt like, I don't know, it felt like a little cold and detached and plot heavy, and I could never quite click into it. I saw the whole thing, but I couldn't really remember it. But Greg Wiseman also created Gargoyles in the 90s, and he did Spectacular Spider-Man, which was the best Spider-Man animated series anyone's ever done.
Yeah.
So he's tweeting a lot of the hashtag of Netflix season 3. So
really?
This happens a lot. This happened with Deadpool, was that if
fans.
Executives see a lot of chatter on social media, they'll greenlight it. So maybe he's waiting for a decision.
Yeah, it's possible. But, I mean, that was a show when it was on I didn't care about because I was like, it's not Justice League, so I passed on.
I watched it because it was the next DC show, but honestly, all I can really remember are their character designs, which were very, very close to the animated movies they were doing at the time.
Yeah.
Like Justice League Doom and Crisis on Two Earths. It seemed like that was one universe.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like I said, I skipped it when it was on TV, then went back on Netflix because everyone was telling me it's so good. And I love that show. I think that's one of the better cartoons DC's put out. I definitely rank it up there with like the Spectacular Spider-Man. It's like just really well thought out, story driven, intermixing all the characters, like the way the team operated was really, really cool stuff.
I need to go back. But anyway, you were talking to...
Yeah, and...
So did you get up and ask a question, or was this
afterwards?
Yeah,
they opened the floor up to questions.
Okay.
That was one of the ones I was like, look, Teen Titans is a book I don't recognize... You know, and that was the thing they said. We agree. That was something they said. That was one of the books that got lost. They're going back to basics with a lot of these books. So, and scaling back from 52 ongoing monthlies to roughly 30-some monthlies, even though some of them are going to ship twice a month, they're recommitting themselves to figuring out what made those characters work. So the Teen Titans is going to look like the Teen Titans. It's not going to be Red Arrow with like a baseball hat on and another guy in like a hoodie. It's gonna be,
it sounds like you're making fun of it, but that's actually what they did.
That's really for years, and that's the kind of shit that like it gets so far off message, it's like, you know, who cares anymore. So it seems like a lot of back to basic stuff, which is kind of what I've been hoping for. They did say this DC Rebirth special, it's coming up, I believe it's on sale May 25th, is like a one-shot special. It's 80 pages. It's $2.99. And they said it's going to be a lot like the Infinite Crisis special.
Countdown one, yeah.
Yeah. They said there's something supposed to happen in this issue that's like... they say this shit all the time, but I kind of believe them this time, is that it's one of the most significant comics they're going to put out in the next... Or they've put out in 5 years.
Well, if you remember that Countdown to Infinite Crisis issue, which had like an Alex Ross painting of Batman.
It was a Jim Lee drawing painted by Alex Ross.
That's where they killed off Ted Kord, the Blue Beetle, who they've never brought back.
Right. And that's a lot like the same language talked about for this issue coming up on the 25th. So we've upped our orders on the book. They encouraged all the retailers to double whatever our numbers were on that book, which is...
Oddly enough, they encouraged you to double their orders on everything.
Yeah.
You know what I think? I think you should order as much DC product as you possibly can, until it chokes your store and you go out of business. Next question.
So we did have a couple conversations with Dan Dito. We had a couple conversations with Jim Lee, but it just seemed like they were getting back to basics. The book shipping on time, they've got two creative teams on every book. Well, I guess two artists at least on every book. So they'll do one story arc. And it's like every other issue, I think, is a different artist. And they said they figured out a way to make that so it doesn't get crazy convoluted or crazy confusing.
Well, Spider-Man was able to do that around Brand New Day. They were shipping three times a month. And they had a writer's room.
Right.
Which coordinated the overall story arcs. Mark Waid was part of it. Greg Rucka. That's where Dan Slott started on Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was one of the crew.
He was one of like five writers, and they kept that pretty clean.
And it worked out.
And they would swap out. Each writer would do a story.
Yeah.
And they would swap artists.
And
so maybe
that's
what DC's
what
thinking.
They're ending up doing. They had a lot of artwork.
No more
there.
Weekly titles then.
Right. And one of the things they said is they realize they've had problems with book shipping on time monthly, but they said since they started the new 52, they've always had a weekly series, since 52 came out years ago.
Right. 52 was the first one, and that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Also because it was Greg Rucka and Grant Morrison.
Oh, it was their A-team.
And yeah. And
that was a feat to pull
Mark
that
off. Mark Waid was on that.
But they were saying is that they've shipped weekly books for 5 or 8 years now. And the weekly books have never been late.
That's true.
Editorially speaking, like none of those weekly books ever shipped, and that's something even Marvel hasn't been able to do.
Right. I read 52. I loved.
Yeah. Countdown.
I bailed. Trinity. I bailed.
Yeah, that was another one that was a mess.
Yeah, and that was Busiek and Bagley. So I had real high expectations. I was trying to go back and reread that like about a month ago, and I couldn't get past issue 5. And then I read Batman Eternal, which was okay, but it was a lot of subplots just ramming into each other. And then Batman and Robin Eternal was horrible.
Yeah.
I heard good things about, was it Earth 2?
Yeah, there was an Earth two weekly book. I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things they've been doing for a while. They're kind of doing away with it now because, like I said, they're trying to focus on this like back to basic stuff.
Well, and by shipping a lot of their big books twice a month, that fills all of those spots.
It does. And I'd rather pay twice monthly for a very good Batman book than six or eight times a month for mediocre Batman books.
Yeah, my problem is I'm such a Batman fan is that I end up reading most of the books. So I'm reading Batman every week anyway.
Yeah.
So that's going to double my monthly budget, which at this point, I was talking to Tina about this, who's been on the show a lot. It's not the money. And it's not the amount of reading. It's the long box space.
Yeah.
Now, it's just like, that's going to, like, if I'm reading Batman and Detective and Nightwing is coming back as twice monthly, if I stayed on Batgirl, or if I read, I think Damian is now moving over to Teen Titans. If I read all those books monthly, that would be a long box a year.
Yeah. And I think that's the issue where I've moved away from getting single issues just because I have an apartment. I can't store all this crap. Yeah. You know, it's like I don't have room for it.
I have a house, and for me, it's about having no holes in the run.
Yeah.
So I have trade paperbacks and graphic novels of the stories I really, really love. But I love to see the ups and downs of characters as they go through the years.
Yeah.
So I like having like the bad Amazing Spider-Man runs and the bad Batman runs. I like looking at my boxes and going, this is everything. I have every Batman, every Spider-Man, every Fantastic Four, which no longer exists, so that's easy to collect.
Yeah.
And I think every Iron Man published in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I love being able to go through, is like, what did it look like in 75?
It's like, when I was 12, like, this is what I would have been reading.
Right. So yeah. I enjoy that, which is why I'll probably stick with the twice monthlies. And now, like I said, these titles, Amazing Spider-Man's been twice a month for years.
Yeah.
It used to be three times a month. But Amazing Spider-Man is the only Peter Parker title. Now there's a bunch of spinoffs, but they're different characters.
Yeah, and that's, I like that. I don't mind there being spinoff characters. And Marvel's finally doing the thing I've been saying, at least I want for a while, is there's two Spider-Mans right now. They're both Spider-Man.
Yeah, Miles Morales and Peter Parker.
During the last, this is spoilerish, if you haven't read Standoff at all, but Captain America, Steve Rogers, got de-aged. He's back to being like...
Right, he was old for the last year or two.
Yeah, they made him, and he's going to go back to being Captain America, but they're going to keep Falcon as Captain America, which I think is a really good move.
And that's not spoilers, because there's a ton of ads out now
that
show both
caps. Just in case. Oh, and then the new Quasar is like their big reveal.
There's
I don't know if
he's... Quasar?
Yeah, Marvel did a thing about a week and a half ago. They released like an image of a star, and they said the long-awaited return of a hero is coming. And everyone's like, it's Captain Marvel, it's Captain Marvel. And I'm like, guys, that's Quasar's symbol. It's Quasar. So there's like a new Quasar.
The only reason to make a new Quasar, in my mind, is if Quasar is in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, I like Quasar, though.
We heard Nathan...
Yeah, this is another announcement I really like.
Nathan Fillion is in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
As Wonder Man.
Yep.
So did you see the movie posters?
No, I read an article about it, and the article I saw just had a picture of Nathan Fillion. They didn't show the posters.
Yeah, there's some... I guess... So for those of you who don't know who Wonder Man is, because he's pretty awesome, but he's pretty far down the list.
He's a C-level Avenger.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't even the star of the West Coast Avengers when I was reading West Coast Avengers.
But this is a guy, he can, like, fly, he's the strongest Thor, and he's made out of, like, energy.
He's kind
of
Superman.
Yeah, yeah, he's like Superman without all the bells and whistles. And in the movies, or in the comics, he was, like, a scientist, and then he got superpowers from Baron Zemo to fight the Avengers, then he got killed, then they brought him back, like, decades later. And then
This is why I'm not an Avengers fan.
No, this is awesome. And then he became an actor in the 80s. So do you remember Akron? Do you know what Akron is?
Yeah, he had these lightning bolts that he could pull out of a backpack.
Yeah.
He was in a George Perez X-Men annual. That's what I remember.
He was
from
a big X-Men guy because he kept like kidnapping Storm to like.
Because Storm had lightning and he had lightning.
Yeah.
Apparently that's all you needed.
Right.
Because there was no match.com.
Well, originally he was an Avengers villain and the Avengers get, like, kidnapped to go to that world to, like, fight wars for him or whatever nonsense. So, in the comics in the 80s, when Wonder Man became an actor, He was originally going to be a stuntman because he couldn't die, but then he got into acting, and he became like an Arnold Schwarzenegger type actor where he was like terrible, but he's in these action movies.
Yeah, he was like cheesy. I remember there was a Wonder Man one-shot that Bob Layton did in the 80s.
Yeah.
That like opened with him on set, and the director called cut because the ionic energy was coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, he had to wear like special contacts.
Yeah, he wore sunglasses all the time.
But he plays Akron in a movie. Uh-huh. Like, he adapts the war they go and fight into, like, a movie, a screenplay, and, like, plays him. So in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, that's one of the movie posters. He played Akron. And then he did, like, he played Tony Stark in, like, a biopic, like a Steve Jobs type thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
They got really cool stuff like
that. And with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's the superhero Wonder Man. He might just be Simon Williams.
The 80s actor is what it looks like.
And which is great for Nathan Fillion, because there was Joss Whedon said as a joke that Nathan Fillion was going to be Ant-Man. And the internet went insane. And this was before Paul Rudd was cast.
Right.
And I think Edgar Wright. Stephen Wright directed a movie in monotone. Everyone be superheroes now. this is before Edgar Wright had quit Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And like Joss Whedon had to come out and said, I was kidding, Nathan Fillion is not this. Yeah. So it's great that Nathan Fillion is a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put it past them to get like an Infinity Stone in the same room with him and give him superpowers. Yeah, I wouldn't mind it, because then you could put him on the Avengers. He could be your comedic relief to Doctor Strange. Like, I could see after Civil War, Infinity War, all this shit, your Avengers
I could see
lineup.
It happening in the way that Tim Blake Nelson became the leader for like half a second in the Ed Norton Hulk movie.
That's in continuity still.
I know, even though Bruce Banner was recast. So if they ever wanted to do the leader, they could get Tim Blake Nelson.
They could do the leader,
of course,
Abomination.
They did Bruce Banner again and recast him.
That's true. So that was cool. I really enjoyed that announcement. The DC panel, going back to topic, did a lot to reassure me that this shit won't stink. They showed us tons of artwork for a lot of the books. The books look great. Wonder Woman looks phenomenal.
Who's doing Wonder Woman?
I have no idea. I don't know who the guy is.
Is it new talent or?
A lot of new talent. I think the writer on Wonder Woman is a guy who was doing like TV originally. There's some guy from like a band that's doing all these like original properties for DC. They're doing 4 like rated R adult comic books that are going to be like Vertigo type books, I guess. They've got 4.
Well, there was a huge shakeup at Vertigo.
Yeah.
Shelley Bond got fired. And that was a big controversy because all the creators on Vertigo really came to her aid.
Right.
Which, obviously, being an outsider of that, I couldn't really say. Like, I couldn't really weigh in on my opinion. But I did find it really weird that it's, like, a year after they moved to L.A.
Yeah.
So it's like, figure if they had wanted to get rid of her for a while, they wouldn't have moved her to L.A.
Right.
So something happened recently.
It's something, yeah. And they got, like, all these kids' titles coming out, like, 4 different kids' titles that they're really going to kind of redefine, like, how they do kids' books.
Well, they made that big announcement that Jim Lee was going to do like an adult Scooby-Doo universe, and then they were going to create a Hanna-Barbera multiverse.
Yeah,
where like Johnny Quest and Scooby-Doo and Space Ghost and the Herculoids like all live in this interconnected.
Yeah, universe. I guess they said Johnny Quest will be like the linchpin that'll kind of link all the characters. But I guess the Hanna-Barbera people came to DC and like dropped a binder on Dan Dito's desk and said, "Who do you want to use?" And he's a big Hanna-Barbera fan, so they're using everybody. They're doing this big book. It looks
Hanna
really
Barbera
awesome.
Is also owned by Warner Brothers,
right? So they kind of are pushing a lot of those characters.
They bought them in the 90s, kind of sideways. What happened was Ted Turner bought Hanna Barbera to start Cartoon Network, to rerun them all, and then Turner became a part of Warner.
Huh.
So they kind of like eased their way in.
Yeah,
like Warner's didn't go out and buy Hanna Barbera. They bought
something like
Hanna-Barbera.
They bought
like something Turner,
because
Turner's kind of independent. It's not a part of Warner Brothers, but there's definitely like this linking thing, which is why, you know, which is why Warner Brothers does as many Scooby-Doo DVDs as they do DC animated DVDs.
Yeah.
And with a lot of the same talent. You'll see like Alan Burnett pop up on the Scooby-Doo DVDs.
That's one of the books that looks kind of dumb.
Looks weird.
They showed us a lot of books, and I'm pretty on board with 98% of the books they showed us. The one they showed us was like Scooby-Doo during the apocalypse, and instead of the mystery machine, it's going to be like a mystery tank. It's like,
If there was an apocalypse, I wouldn't put my money on the teenagers from Scooby-Doo surviving it.
Yeah, and they all met it. Like, they're trying to do, like, the origin for Scooby-Doo, like, how they all meet. And he's like, yeah, they're all going
to
meet
how he learns to talk?
They're all going to meet at Burning Man. And, like, Shaggy's, like, got, like, sleeve tattoos.
Yeah,
and
he's
like,
got a hipster beard.
It's
yeah.
Like, so, shit like that is like, well, this is dumb. At least they're trying. But the Hanna-Barbera stuff looks really good. Doc Shanner's doing the artwork. That guy's, like, phenomenal.
I'd like to see some new Space Ghost.
Space Ghost is going to be in it. And they
dig Space Ghost.
We saw the original art for it, and it looks like they're making Space Ghost like the Green Lantern Corps. Like, there's hundreds of Space Ghosts, and they all were, like, firing their little wrist things at, like, monsters out in space.
Cool.
It looks really, really cool. So, yeah.
Do they all have monkeys?
No, unfortunately, they don't all have monkeys and teenage sidekicks. It looks really cool, and it's... I'm excited to be excited about DC again. It's been a long time.
What are you most excited about from what you saw? Like, what's the title that you want to read the most, and what's the title that you think will sell the best?
The book that'll probably sell the best will be The Batman by it's All-Star Batman.
Oh, well, it's Scott Snyder's new book.
Snyder's book. Ramita's going to be doing art, and then I can't remember who the second guy is doing.
Jock is coming back, I know.
Jock's coming back. I should have brought my list. I had a list of like all the stuff they were telling us, but I think the book I'm probably most excited for is the Futures Quest, which is the Johnny Quest book, which is like all the Hanna-Barbera stuff. The second book would probably be Justice League, just because it's...
What's happening with Justice League?
Well, nothing...
Is Geoff Johns leaving?
Geoff Johns is leaving. He's kind of overseeing a lot of these books. Brian Hitch is writing a Justice League book, and somebody else is writing another Justice League book.
Well, Geoff Johns working on Ben Affleck's Batman movie, which is... confirmed now. I think it's time for Geoff Johns to stop writing monthly comic books.
He is, and that's one of the things they said is he's overseeing a lot of the stuff. He's not actively, as far as I remember, I don't think he's actively writing any monthly titles. Jim Lee's doing like a Suicide Squad book, but who knows how long he'll stay on it.
Yeah, Geoff Johns seems to love those Batman Earth One, so I wouldn't be surprised if they announce a third one of those books.
Those, yeah,
and that's, you know, it took... there was 2 years, I think, between one and two.
Long time, yeah.
So he seems like a guy that doesn't want to leave comics.
Right.
But so that would be a perfect project of like, hey, you get to do Batman.
Yeah.
You know, you get to write this Batman movie, and then on the side you can play with your universe of Batman.
Right. Well, one of the things they said, too, is that they're going to have more Superman titles than Batman titles. This is the first time in a long time, I don't know how long, that they'll be publishing more Superman ongoing. They're really, really trying to push Superman. Dan Dito's got this quote, and we might have said it before on this show before, is that when Superman's working, the rest of DC seems to be working. But when Superman's not working, the rest of DC just seems to kind of, doesn't have anything to, like, rally behind.
Makes a lot of sense. And Batman's usually working.
Yeah, Batman usually works. They want to bring Green Lantern back. They said when after Rebirth, Green Lantern was their second highest profitable character right behind Batman. The monthly books were selling that well.
Back when Geoff Johns was writing.
Back when Geoff Johns. So they want to get back to a back-to-basics version of Green Lantern, where here's the Green Lantern that spent time on Earth. Here's the Green Lantern core book. You know, one of the things they said that I really liked was they're launching like a new Cyborg book, and they're launching... somebody else, I can't remember who. But basically the idea is that they're going to take characters like Cyborg, or Nightwing's coming back, right?
Yeah, they're ending Grayson, yeah. Which was an idea I never thought really worked.
And the Grayson writer's getting the monthly Batman gig.
Yes, Tom King.
Yeah.
So they're moving him up. So apparently they're happy with Grayson, but that's as far as the direction they wanted to take them to. And for people that didn't read, it wasn't that big a seller. He completely ditched his superhero identity and became a secret agent.
He's pretty much like Nick Fury, I guess.
Pretty much. And he was, I didn't read Grayson, but he was a major player in Batman and Robin Eternal, which I did not enjoy. I read the whole thing, and I realized at the end I didn't enjoy it because it was called Batman and Robin Eternal, and it featured neither Batman nor Robin.
Ew, I guess it was supposed to be like almost like a Robin team book where they had all the different
Robins.
But Damian
wasn't in it. Damon wasn't until the very, very end.
Yeah.
And Batman was Commissioner Gordon basically through that whole run. And Commissioner Gordon rarely appeared. So it was like Tim Drake, Jason Todd, and Dick Grayson, a lot of spoiler, and a lot of Cassandra Cain.
Yeah.
Not that much Barbara Gordon
either.
Should
have been called like Batman Family Eternal.
Yeah. Basically, any book that was doing well kind of stayed out of its way. So it was like. So, like, Robin, Son of Batman, was doing well and had this ongoing story arc. So they were like, don't mess with that arc. Just leave him out.
Yeah.
The Batgirl of Burnside arc got a lot of buzz. So it was like, yeah, just leave him alone. So I think it was the the characters where their books weren't selling well enough on their own.
Right.
So that got dragged into this story.
Okay.
But now that that's done, we're getting him as Nightwing again. We're also getting him in the classic costume again, because in the New 52, he wore the classic costume but they changed the blue stripe to red.
Yeah.
And he's going back to blue.
They're going back to blue. But the thing they said that I liked about Nightwing and Cyborg specifically was these aren't characters that have... They're basically trying to say, look, the reason it's easy to do Batman or Superman or Justice League or something like this is they have an iconic rogues gallery. If you're ever stuck writing like a Batman book, throw a dart at a board full of Batman villains and just write whatever villain your dart hits. Do you know what I mean? It's really easy to come up with a Batman story. He's got so many great villains. They said, Cyborg, name one Cyborg villain. And there's none. So they want to
borrow from Teen Titans.
Right. That's what they want to say, is they want to develop rogues galleries for all the characters that have existed for 30, 40, 50, 60 years who don't have rogues galleries. One of the things they said about Nightwing is they were sitting down and trying to come up with what would Nightwing's Joker look like. You know, Batman has a Joker. It's this chaotic symbol to Batman's ordered Gotham. That's a perfect, like, tension point between those two characters. So they were trying to come up with something similar for Nightwing, and they realized he doesn't need to have something chaotic to rally against his order. Nightwing was the first sidekick character, so his arch villain would be a mentor type villain.
Oh, I see.
So they've got like a villain, I don't know what it's called, they didn't tell us much, but it's supposedly like evil Batman essentially, who's a mentor figure to Nightwing throughout the book. So he'll be in a mentor slash major, like his arc villain or whatever you want to call it, throughout the run. So it's stuff like that where it's like they really do seem like they're actually thinking about...
They're thinking story first, not event.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of DC's policy in the last couple of years has just been like, you know, throw 5 pounds of shit at a wall and just see what sticks. Now it's like, okay, let's limit what we're doing, figure it out, and then send it. Like Teen Titans is a good example. You know, the team's been unrecognizable. They're like, okay, Damian's the leader of the Teen Titans. It's his, like, team. He's like the team leader, and I think it's like all the characters from the animated movie they just did. It's like Beast Boy, Raven, you know, Blue Beetle. It's like the characters you'd think of as Teen Titans as the Titans again. So it really seems like they're getting back to basics, which is, like I said, it's something I've been waiting for them to do for a long time, and this is the first time in a long time I'd say I'm actually excited for monthly DC books again. I don't know the last time I read a monthly DC book that I wasn't forcing myself to read because I have to talk to people about this shit.
Yeah, that does sound really interesting, because I think the main difference between this and the New 52 is that it sounds like with Rebirth, they're really kind of grooming their younger talent. As I said, Tom King was kind of an unknown, started with Grayson, now he's getting Batman. They're moving a lot of guys up. And it reminds me when they launched the New 52, they kind of sold it as like, oh, it's this jump on point. It's very accessible. It's very easy to understand. But when you think about the talent that was involved, they hired Bob Harris to run it.
Yeah.
I haven't heard a peep out of Bob Harris in years. I don't even know if he's at DC. But what Bob Harris did in retrospect was he brought all the 90s guys back. He gave Rob Liefeld a few books. Jim Lee was drawing the Justice League. You know, Scott Lobdell was writing Teen Titans.
They went crazy with variant covers.
They went crazy with variant covers.
Did the lenticular covers.
It was like this resurgence of the 90s. And even Greg Capullo, who is, you know, the hottest artist today,
was a
90s guy. He started on Quasar, who we just mentioned, went to X-Force, and then did a long, long run on Spawn. And then this was his coming back to the big two. And that's probably a perfect segue, was one of the only things that I think people are sorry to see go about the New 52 is the team of Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. And we just had their final issue on stands.
I'd say they're arguably the best out of the New 52. The Batman was probably the most successful book they had, with the most like award winning creative team. Like, Geoff Johns did Justice League. No one really cared.
After Jim Lee stopped drawing it.
And it was, even Jim Lee drawing it didn't look that great. It didn't look as good as Hush. But Capullo on Batman, and this guy's doing the best work of his career. You know, it's a book that you normally, like I said, I didn't really care for Capullo before this. I read a couple Quasars of his. I don't care about Spawn, so I never read any of his Spawns. But he came back, and he... he was like, he's kind of like a perfect Batman artist I would have never thought to put on Batman.
Yeah, I was a big Capullo fan on X-Force because he was part of that wave that followed Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld leaving to start Image.
Yeah.
Which was actually around the time I came back to X-Men. I'd quit. I missed all the valuable issues of X-Men.
Right.
I came in after John Byrne. I came in at the end of Paul Smith and John Romita Jr.'s first run. And then I stuck through Silvestri, and then I quit right before Jim Lee comes on.
Well, it makes you feel any better. You can still get those issues really cheap.
Now you can. Back then, they were like $20 a piece.
Yeah.
And then I came back right when Jim Lee left, and it was like Brandon Peterson, and it was very early art from the Kubert brothers, Andy and Adam.
Yeah.
Andy was doing X-Men, and Andy's now doing Dark Knight 3. Adam was doing Wolverine. He was actually better than Andy at the time. And now you don't see that much from
Adam. Yeah, I can't remember which Kubert it was that John Buscema, he like loved one of the Kubert kids. And I'm not like a huge Kubert Sons fan. Do you know?
I like them.
I don't know. I think they're highly overrated, and I think they're coasting on the coattails of their dad, but... John Buscema had this quote about, like, I can't remember which one of the brothers he was talking about. He's like, "The guy's a genius." And it's like, John Buscema, it's like, you're a brilliant artist. And how are you saying that these guys are geniuses when I think they're a bit of a knucklehead?
The thing you have to remember about John Buscema is he hated superhero comics.
Yeah, he hated.
He only liked drawing Conan, which he did for decades.
And it looked great.
But he did, like.
Hated Spider-Man. He thought Spider-Man was the worst idea for a superhero ever.
And he did a few of them. He did that beautiful run on Silver Surfer. Hated it. Did some of the best Avengers issues ever. He hated doing them. So he's probably not the biggest judge. But Capullo came in with the Kubert brothers. And I liked him right away. He was drawing X-Force. And he was like less horror-based. And he was more kind of cartoony. Like the faces were open. And I was also a big fan of Cable, and he was drawing X-Force, and I liked his Cable. And he came in right on the Executioner's Song crossover, which was like the whole Strife thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of got me back in X-Men. I'd been gone for maybe 3 years, but it was this like critical 3 years. Like, I didn't know who Gambit was. I didn't know who Bishop was. I didn't know who Cable was, because all of this stuff had happened.
Yeah.
And then I jumped it back in with both feet, and I was reading everything. From then, like through the 90s, which is basically you can mark the 90s with the crossover. So
yeah.
I was there for Fatal Attractions and the Phalanx Covenant and the Age of Apocalypse. And these were all the main guys. John Romita Jr. was back on Uncanny X-Men. But then I was reading Spawn because I was a fan of McFarlane on Spider-Man. And I knew Spawn wasn't very good, but it was always fun to look at.
Yeah.
And then McFarlane pulled Capullo over. And that really shaped his style because... Capullo went from trying to mix his style with McFarlane, and for a while, Capullo was penciling and McFarlane was inking, so it still kind of have that consistent look.
Yeah.
And then after a while, like, McFarlane left and Danny Mickey came on, and Danny Mickey is still Capullo's inker. Like, they both...
He's on Batman?
He did Batman, yeah. He did the whole run of Batman with him. But Capullo went from trying to be McFarlane to being better than McFarlane. And that run, again, those stories are not good.
Yeah.
Like, he stayed on it from, like, 15 to 100. He was on that book for a really long time. And his style just got better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
And I liked him. And then he said after he left Spawn, McFarlane just had him on, like, publicity materials and press stuff. So he was drawing, like, packaging for the figures, and he was drawing posters.
Banners and,
like,
and shit.
Yeah, so he worked for McFarlane for, like, another 5 years, but not doing comics.
Yeah.
So it seemed like he had gone away. And when they announced him on Batman, I thought that was really interesting, because I remembered how good he was on Spawn. I was like, it'd be great to see him on a character that means something.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy. I'd love to know... to give, like, the outside people a perspective, I guess. To put it in perspective, and hopefully this guy is getting paid pretty well, Batman sells 60 times better than Spawn.
Wow.
So just think of a guy going from Spawn monthly to Batman. If you think about it, it's always in the top five, if not the top three, best-selling monthly titles. This guy is on... one of the premier projects in the industry.
But remember, when he started on Spawn, Spawn was the number one book. So he basically rode Spawn down.
Yeah.
And then now and dropped off before it really went down. So this was really his comeback. He was used to being on the biggest book. But the thing was, when he was on Spawn, nobody was talking about him.
Right.
Because McFarlane's out there going, me, it's my character. I own this company. I make these toys. Look at me. Which he's still doing. There was a YouTube video of him this week of McFarlane drawing Batman. Because, you know, oh, hey, I raised this kid. Now he's big drawing Batman. Look at me. I can draw Batman.
Yeah. He drew, like, you want to lock that guy in a closet.
I know, he drew one Batman story in the 80s.
Yeah. No one gives a shit about McFarlane.
It's still reprinted because it's year two.
Yeah. But yeah, this guy, I think, I mean, like I said, he's really, really at the peak of his powers. Like, this guy is just nailing it. And he left Batman to do, I think, creator-owned shit with, like, Mark Millar.
Yeah, he's doing a story with Mark Millar, but
this guy's chasing that Hollywood money now.
Well, everybody, you get to a certain point in comics, you know, everybody wants a movie.
Yeah.
Well, like, John Romita Jr. left Monthly Marvel Comics to do The Gray Man, which went nowhere, but then he did it again and did Kick-Ass.
Right.
And there's two of those movies.
Yep.
And who wrote
and
that?
Probably a third coming.
And who wrote those movies?
Mark Millar.
And who wrote Wanted?
Mark Millar.
And who wrote Kingsman?
Mark Millar.
Who's the guy you want to write your story if you're an artist and want a movie?
Right. And I think that's the thing is, I was talking about this with one of our subscribers, Marco Garcia, a week or two ago, maybe. And we were talking about, like, what the guys in the industry probably make. Like, you can only make so much money making comic books. Even the guys top of the industry, the top 1% of the guys are maybe making over $100,000 a year.
Are you talking about pure page rate? Or are you because the money,
the page rate and covers and all that shit. Right,
well, the money's also in royalties because, like, you get a trade made, you get an absolute made, you get your stuff on marketing materials for DC as a whole.
Right.
You know, you get, like, Capullo's got T-shirts and posters that are in Walmart and Target of his art that DC was like, hey, people like this image of Batman, put it on this T-shirt. Right. That's where you make the money.
That Joker image with the face, they made that mask.
Yep.
You know, but basically what I'm saying is it's a trade-off, right? So you can make a lot more money, like, as a storyboard or a concept artist than a comic book artist. That just pays a lot better. That's like guys like Joe Madureira, who people love for whatever fucking reason. He goes and makes video games. He designs video games because he gets paid a buttload of money. Now, the trade-off is creative, right? If you do storyboards, Greg Capullo can go to Hollywood and make a fortune doing storyboards. But every 10th storyboard he does gets cut out of the movie. They just don't even film the scene.
Nobody sees those storyboards.
No one sees them.
Steve Scross did. Steve Scross was doing Cable, and then Cable became X-Man, which was a bigger seller, so he stayed on X-Man.
Yeah.
And then they gave him Amazing Spider-Man, and he did this run on Amazing Spider-Man. The stories aren't that great. But then he just left comics, and you found out he did the storyboards for The Matrix.
Yeah.
And that's what he does now. And there's a ton of money in video games. When Norm Breyfogle was on the show, he said what paid for his medical bills after his stroke was not the hardcover collection of his Detective Comics issues, which is available now, but it was the fact that he created Anarchy, and they used Anarchy in Batman Arkham Origins.
Yeah.
There's way – and people have known this for years. There's – way more better money to be made making superheroes, just superheroes, than there is in comic books.
Oh yeah,
but comic books are the core of superheroes, and that's why we as fans love them, and that's why the artistic talent loves them and wants to come back to them. Why is Neil Adams still doing? You know, Neil Adams has been doing advertising for 20, 30 years. You can buy a portfolio of Neil Adams' advertising work.
Yeah.
That's mostly what Continuity Studio does. But you know what? He's doing a Superman story.
Because he wants to do a Superman story.
You can't argue that the guy
isn't a fan of this stuff. You know, look at John Cassaday. That guy doesn't want to draw comics. He wants to direct movies.
Right.
He can't direct movies, so he draws comic books.
He got to do an episode of Dollhouse because Joss Whedon wrote his X-Men comic books.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, a lot of these guys want to transition. And it's actually kind of a shame when they pick up, like, Kick-Ass is a good example. Mark Millar writes it, John Romita Jr. draws it. The translation, then, if Mark Millar is writing your movie, John Romita Jr. should direct your movie. And I get he would be a first-time director, but directors, the best directors in the world are comic book artists.
I'm going to completely disagree with you there, and I will disagree with you with one example. Frank Miller's The Spirit.
I, but I would
Frank
say,
Miller's The Spirit looks beautiful. And they gave him that movie because Robert Rodriguez gave him credit for directing Sin City.
Right.
Which he didn't.
No, I agree.
But just because you know how to compose a frame does not mean you know how to pace a scene, and certainly does not mean that you know how to talk to actors. And that's what Frank Miller's The Spirit proves. The guy's made some of the greatest comic books that have ever lived. The guy's had fantastic movies made out of his comic books, including Nolan's trilogy,
yeah,
because there's so much stolen in Batman Begins and Dark Knight from him. But when he directed a movie himself, it's a total
turd.
But
let's be clear that Frank Miller hasn't done anything awesome since like the mid-90s. So this is a guy who's not super well in the head and not super well in health either. So I would argue that a guy like John Romita Jr., I would much rather see him direct a kick-ass movie than whatever knucklehead they got to direct the last two.
I would like to see it. But as a studio, I wouldn't be so willing to greenlight it.
Yeah, because pair him up with somebody.
Yeah, but you have this guy who's, yeah, he's got a great visual sense, but he sits in his room by himself and draws.
Totally.
Like, how am I supposed to trust that a guy like that is going to be able to direct 100 people in a soundstage?
Right.
And guess what? A hurricane hit your set and wiped it out. What are you going to do? Or this actor won't come out of his trailer.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I think you need to pair him up.
What is John Romita going to do?
You need to pair him up with a guy who's good at managing people.
And that was Sin City.
Yeah.
With Robert Rodriguez saying, I want to take these comics and make them look like your artwork. Or that's Mike Mignola on Hellboy.
Right.
Where Guillermo's like, I want to make this movie, and I cannot talk about Guillermo del Toro without doing it, because he's awesome.
He is.
He's like a Mexican Santa Claus.
He is.
And then Peter Jackson is the New Zealand Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
Which is why I loved it when he was going to make The Hobbit.
Yeah, he should have.
Which would have been better.
Yeah. Probably.
Well, what happened was they got tied up in rights for years, and then Pacific Rim got greenlit. So
yeah,
he's like,
I'm glad we got that movie, because that movie
is
awesome.
And it sounds like we're not getting another one.
They suck.
But, yeah, I mean, I feel like the visual sense is one skill you need to become a really good director.
Yeah. I think, because especially John Romita Jr., I think is probably one of the best storytellers in comics.
Oh, absolutely.
I think guys like him, it's like they should give him a scene or give him something more to do on the movie, because I do think we'd get better directors.
Well, make him a producer at least.
Yeah.
I mean, the best scenario of doing that is what Joss Whedon did for John Cassaday.
He gave him an episode
of the show he was running. Yeah. Joss Whedon doesn't run a show now.
Right.
When Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started, we thought Joss Whedon was running it, but it's his brother and his sister-in-law.
His less popular brother.
Yeah, less talented brother.
Yeah.
Too. And that's why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is like...
How would you like to be like Joss Whedon's brother? That's like being Jeb Bush.
Yeah, he gets to run a show, though. Jeb Bush don't run nothing.
Nothing.
Jeb put an exclamation point after his first name and everything.
Please clap.
Although, here's the difference between being Jed Whedon and Jeb Bush. People like Joss Whedon.
Right, that's true.
But getting back to Capullo and Snyder, because the other thing was Snyder was a new talent. And that was a weird mix.
Yeah, he'd really only done American Vampire, was like his big book.
And he had been doing Detective.
Yeah.
He was doing a good job on Detective when Dick Grayson was Batman. And then they did to him what they're doing to Tom King now.
Yeah.
Hey, you're doing a good job on this lower tier book.
We'll
Let's put you on the bigger book. You'll make a better page rate and you'll have more say of what happens to this character. You don't have to follow anybody else.
Yeah.
Because at the time, right before the New 52, Grant Morrison was running things. And he was doing crazy stuff that people loved, and I was one of those people that loved his run, but the other books didn't know what the fuck to do. They were letting Tony Daniel write a book because he had done part of his Grant Morrison's run. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, you know, especially with Grant Morrison, we talked about this before, is like him or Joss Whedon, or you put some huge, huge name on a book that has a lot of other titles that may or may not tie into it, all the other titles kind of just immediately go to shit. You know, it's like when they put Joss Whedon on Astonishing X-Men, there wasn't any other X-Men book that looked like that. That book was doing its own thing. All the other X-Men books were either canceled or floundering.
Well, I'd say all of the aughts, it was only worth reading one X-Men book because Joss Whedon followed Grant Morrison.
Right.
And when Grant Morrison was writing New X-Men, Uncanny was garbage.
Yeah, because you know, they're the, I think editorially, they just let Grant Morrison kind of do whatever you want. And then everyone else is like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, don't contradict anything Grant's doing.
Right. And Joss Whedon literally replaced Grant Morrison. The story was that Grant Morrison told Joe Quesada at San Diego that he was done and he was going to go over to DC and do Batman. And Joe Quesada ran over to a panel Joss Whedon was doing, was like, hey, how'd you like to do X-Men so I still have a big name? And they started a new title for Joss Whedon, but he followed Grant Morrison.
And even if you read the any of the Astonishing X-Men collected editions, they do preface it by saying, look, we're following Grant Morrison. You know, here's what he did on his arcs. You can understand when we bring back Cassandra Nova, this is a character that Grant Morrison created, and they give a bit of an origin for.
Yeah, and I have those oversized hardcovers before they did omnibuses. That's the run I have of that decade. I don't need anything else.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
And that's kind of what was happening with Batman, with Snyder and Capullo. Was, first of all, they are the only team that did the entire New 52. It kind of pisses me off that they're not doing the 52nd issue. It seemed like a scheduling thing. Like Dan DiDio wanted there to be 52 issues of the New 52. But, like, the 52nd issues of the titles that ran are all, like, guest talent and fill-ins.
Yeah, it's like when, before the New 52 started, a lot of those books
just started to sputter down.
They winded down, and it just seemed like, well...
I'd rather there be no book that month.
Yeah, but I think publishing, they have, you know, they want to crank those books out, and they line up those printers and everything.
Bottom line.
So, yep.
Well, what did you think... Now that it's done, they were, like I said, they're the only team that did the whole run.
Yeah.
And they're the only team that comes close. So even though they didn't do the final issue, and there were a couple of fill-in artists, like Snyder did some 1- and 2-issue stories. There's like a Clayface story.
Yeah.
There's like a Bluebird story. There was one issue that just kind of promoted Eternal. Capullo didn't do all those, so he missed maybe 4 or 5 issues.
Right.
Snyder did the whole run. How long did you stay with it? Because you're not reading it now?
I gave up, I think, after Endgame. I came back for Endgame, but before Endgame, it was the...
Year one. The year zero.
Year zero is when I gave up. I think I tried, like, the first 2 issues, then he fought, like, a bone monster on a blimp, and I was like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah, I read the whole thing, and I feel like there are five... They did 5 major stories.
Yeah.
Personally, I feel like they're not done because they didn't do all the villains. As you were saying before, Batman has the best rogues gallery.
Yeah.
And that's part of what All-Star is going to be. Snyder says, in this run, I'm going to do all the villains that I didn't do with Capullo. So the first story is John Romita Jr. is a Two-Face story.
Yeah.
So, but they did 5 major stories. There was The Court of Owls, which was the first year, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Then there was Death of the Family, which was the first Joker story, which was really interesting. And that's one of the only times where you see Snyder and Capullo follow somebody else, because Joker gets his face cut off in Detective Comics for no reason, just to set up the Dollmaker as a badass.
Yeah.
Tony Daniels' run on Detective was not good. But then, like, Snyder and Capullo took that ball and ran with it and did this whole creepy story with his face stitched on. Then there was the Zero Year, which I didn't like either.
Yeah.
And that was a full year. And at the time, people were like, really, you're going to redo Frank Miller's Year One? And they're like, oh, no, it's going to be different. And it was just nothing even connected to that.
Right.
And it kind of sent the message of like, oh, yeah, Year One doesn't really count here. And then they did Endgame, which was the sequel, the Joker sequel.
Yeah.
That was good.
That I liked.
And then there's this whole last year of Commissioner Gordon being a robot Batman.
Yeah, and that's one of the things they mentioned at this panel was like, you know, we get, you know, people didn't like Gordon as Batman, the robot suit, they said it ran too long.
It was almost a year. It was like 10 issues.
It was almost a year. They should have came in under 6. Under six months.
And that was the lesson they learned 20 years ago when they made Azrael Batman. Azrael was supposed to be Batman for 3 months. It stretched out to 9 months, and the sales just started to drop.
Yeah. Well, and it's like they did the same thing with Spider-Man. When the Clone Saga was selling great, they said, okay, we're supposed to end this. And they're like, no, keep it going. Draw it out because sales are really good. And then they plummeted.
Right. Although sometimes it works. Superior Spider-Man was supposed to be, I think, 12 issues.
Yeah.
And then it ended up being 30 because people liked it.
Yeah.
So for every example of things going wrong, things go right by using the same strategy.
Yeah.
But I think this Batman run, it's one of the longest runs I can think of. I had to go back to the 90s to think of a longer run. Because the 90s ones were very, very long. And we've had a lot of that talent on this show. Kelly Jones' run with Doug Mensch was like, actually, it wasn't even that long. That was like 3 years. But Graham Nolan and Chuck Dixon were on that book for like 6 years.
Yeah.
But those books got broken up a lot because of the crossovers.
Yeah.
So you don't have really the single run of like
consistency.
Their first issue to their last issue is one universe.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I have to go back to the 90s. And even when I think of the great, great runs, Norm Brayfogle was on Batman for a very long time, but with Alan Grant, and then Alan Grant didn't stay on the whole time. But even when you go back to Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, which is like the benchmark for modern Batman, if you're not talking about Dick Sprang or Bob Kane, when you go back and look at that run, if you look at the Neil Adams omnibus, there's no consecutive issues.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
He's all over the place, and because there's no continuity.
Yeah.
So basically, they would give Neil Adams a story, and he would finish it when he damn well finished it.
And they just insert it
in. They just insert it in the next spot. So when you look at that run, it's like, here's an issue of Batman, and then the next issue is an issue of Detective.
Right.
Because it's all of what was ready to go. So that's not even a run.
Yeah.
So to do that in this day and age, when even guys like John Romita Jr., who can knock it out of the park month in, month out, is only committing to 6 issues of Batman.
Right.
That's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, I think it's something that there's very few books that do the long runs with the same two creative teams, and it's something I really enjoy when they do it. You know, out of the New 52, the only other run I think that comes close to it that's a writer-artist pair is Azzarello and Cliff Chang on Wonder Woman.
Right. Now, how long was that? Was that 2 years?
They did maybe 30-some issues. I think Razzarella wrote 30-some issues. Chang didn't do all of it, but he did probably like 80% of that book, I think. And then they had other fill-in artists, because I don't think he worked super fast. Now, I never read it, but I've heard nothing but awesome things about that run. Those are really the only two out of the New 52, I think, that were a clear vision for a character that didn't really wafer too much. It seemed like every other book was all over the place.
People were getting fired. And
Yeah, and it's creative teams all, like you said, Geoff Johns is on Justice League for a long time, but it wasn't good.
A lot of different artists.
Tons of different artists. He'd leave, he came back. He would use it as a crossover machine for a while. It was kind of a mess. So it didn't seem like, and it didn't ever really feel like the Justice League. Mm. And I think that's another problem is it's like one of the things they mentioned that hopefully we'll see more is more connectivity between the books. So it's like if something happens in one book to Wonder Woman, that gets reflected in the other books Wonder Woman appears
in. I'm all in favor of that unless you're forcing me to read books I don't want to read.
Yeah, and I don't like crossovers, but it's like if, you know, Wonder Woman became the God of War in the Wonder Woman monthly book, but then that never got mentioned in Justice League. Well, then Batman's been running around in Justice League in the Mobius chair. That never gets mentioned.
And Batman was Bruce Wayne in Justice League the entire time Commissioner Gordon was Batman in all the other Batman books.
And that's the kind of thing where it really makes the universe disconjointed when, you know, Green Lantern in the Justice League book is, has you to picture him in his outfit and everything, but in the monthly Green Lantern book, he's wearing like a trench coat. He has a glove instead of a ring, and he's got like long hair.
Marvel's always been good at doing that. Marvel will have somebody like, say, old Captain America would show up in Spider-Man, and there'd be like one little joke about it or a line, and there'd be an asterisk in the caption. Just go ahead and read Captain America. But they never made it the point of the story.
Yeah, it's like Ms. Marvel's a great example of that. I read the Ms. Marvel monthly, and she's in the Avengers now. And in the Ms. Marvel book, they show her running around all over the place, trying to run to high school, running back to Avengers meetings, hanging out with Kid Nova. And then they talk about it in the other titles, you know, in Spider-Man. The Miles Morales monthly title, they talk about how he's on the Avengers. In the Vision monthly book, they talk about how he's on the Avengers. Like, it's the same. The characters are, it just seems consistent, where in DC, it just seems like the Wild West. Everyone's just kind of doing their own thing.
But hopefully, from what you're saying from this event, maybe those days are behind them.
It seems like it.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, we have the same thing. As we're recording this, we both saw Keanu, which came out this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I went, I got to the theater a little early.
You went to the theater?
Yeah, I did. We have one like within walking distance. It's like 2 or 3
of your house?
Away. Yeah, my apartment. And so I got there early, and I sat in on Jungle Book for a while.
How is that? The Favreau?
Did he do that, John?
John Favreau really? Directed it. Yeah.
I only saw like maybe 10 minutes of it. It was awesome. Like yeah. It's like a movie I want to see. My parents thought they said it was really good.
It's got a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's got a great cast. Ben Kingsley plays Puma or whatever. The black.
It's been a long time since I've seen the old animated version.
No, he's a panther. I don't know. The panther is played by Ben Kingsley. Bill Murray plays Blue. Shere Khan is played by Idris Elba. And the snake is played by Scarlett Johansson.
Huh.
And I guess my mom was like raving about the kid they got to play Mowgli. It's like they, you know, grabbed 1,000 kids and they said this one. And I guess the kid's like phenomenal in it. So I watched like the first 10 minutes. It's pretty cool. But yeah, we went to go see Keanu, not together, but separate. And Key and Peele, we're big fans of their
Love
show.
Love Key and Peele, yeah.
And this is their first movie.
I'm still kind of pissed that we don't have the final two seasons on disc or the whole series on Netflix.
Yeah, one or the other will happen soon.
Netflix had Comedy Central for a while, and it seems like they don't.
Yeah.
But Amazon Prime had a couple of seasons, but I would love to watch that whole show again.
Yeah. And I never watched it consistently, but it's one of those ones... you know, you go to YouTube and you look under like their trending videos, and anytime they had like a big skit, it was all over.
Well, they were like the first big show that really went viral. Saturday Night Live tries to do it every week. Yeah. Saturday Night Live like picks a handful of sketches and just pushes them out on Sundays. But Key and Peele, they said, I was reading an article that said their show got like 2 million viewers a week, and their most popular YouTube video, which is Substitute Teacher, was like 57 million. Yeah. So like they were one of the first television shows where the digital was driving all of it.
Yeah.
And like Breaking Bad, the ratings got better and better and better because they did a really smart thing at the end of the YouTube videos. They would have commercials for the show.
Yeah.
Which I had never seen before. Was like at the end of a YouTube video, they were like, hey, watch the show because there's a lot of sketches we're not going to put on YouTube.
Right.
And it did help. But then this past year, they announced... they were ending the show, which made me think they were breaking up, and I was really sad.
Yeah.
Because, like, the show was just starting to peak, and they announced in the trades that they got all these deals, and they got the deals to make multiple movies and an animated show, and Jordan was going to direct a movie, and Key was going to star in this thing, and I was like, oh, man, the success got to them, and they broke up.
Yeah.
But the last season was great, so it didn't seem like they were winding down. And then I saw the trailer for Keanu, and I was like, oh, this is why you end the show.
Yeah, I like that they're going to make movies. I think we've talked before on the show about like people transitioning from like TVs to movies, and we obviously were just talking about it with comics, where it's much more profitable to make movies. And it's one of those rare instances. Like, I don't care about, like, there's very few people, I think, that I like enough to where I'll go see something they did sight unseen. You know, I'm pretty much going to go see any movie Marvel puts out, but I kind of know what I'm getting. You know what I mean? There's very few surprises coming from
Marvel.
Well,
as we said a lot of times, Marvel now is they just make sequels to themselves. Even if right. It's, you know, Doctor Strange is going to be a sequel to Civil War in some way.
Yeah, they'll mention it. And, but this is one of those shows where I didn't really need to watch the trailer. I didn't really have to be convinced to go see it. It was, oh, those guys that are funny do that skit show I really like. Let's see them make a movie. It was like, sure. I didn't watch the trailer. I had no idea what this thing
oh, really?
Was about.
I'd seen the trailer, and I was really excited by the trailer.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought it was really good. It seemed... It wasn't phenomenal. It did kind of seem like one of their skets going on a little too long. That fucking cat is like... I'm blown away by how they did. I don't know if the cat is like a computer cat.
Well, that cat's on the roof of a speeding car at one point.
Yeah, and it's like, so obviously a lot of that cat, it's like, has to be CG, but it's like, it looks so real. It's like, did they train a little kitten to do this? But yeah, I mean, those two guys are great. I like just those two guys in like any situation. The two of them, like, I'm sure there's a stupid amount of improv in this between those two guys. And it just seems like you could put those two guys in a room with, like, anything, and I'd watch that.
Yeah, movie. I agree. I'm huge, huge fans of them. I actually found, you go back, they were on Mad TV, like, the last couple of years of Mad TV.
Okay.
And that was one of the things that got them the Comedy Central show. They were like, hey, you know, we were on Mad TV for a while. We want to do a show that's just us.
Yeah.
And here's the people that, like, we know that can direct it and write it. I agree with you. I really liked this movie. I didn't love it, and I think my expectations were so goddamn high.
Yeah.
Because Key and Peele might be my favorite sketch show I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
That's high
when you
praise.
Think of things like, well, Saturday Night Live is an American icon, so it's been 17 different shows.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I put it up against Monty Python's Flying Circus and Mr. Show and Kids in the Hall, of like these sketch shows that had an enormous impact on me and were one of the reasons I got into comedy, both as a fan and then trying to do it professionally for a while. Key and Peele was so goddamn tight.
Yeah.
That every sketch show you go into, even Chappelle's Show, which people put on this platform.
Yeah.
And Chappelle's Show could murder with things like Rick James or the Prince sketch that's been going around again since Prince died.
Yeah.
But when you watch those episodes, Chappelle's Show had one great sketch.
A week.
And then it was like four pieces of you know, and Kids in the Hall and Monty Python would always have these sketches that weren't really going anywhere. And they were like, they were interesting, and then they kind of hit a wall, and then they'd kind of skate around that wall for a while and then do something else. Kids in the Hall would just have these, like, I have a weird character, and I'm going to do that for 3 minutes. And Monty Python had these weird conceptual things where, like, we don't know where this is going, so now here's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live, as we all know, like, usually the last half hour is not great every single week.
Yeah. Saturday Night Live is the show I only watch when they get, like, really good people to do impressions of, like, the political stuff.
Right.
It's like, I never watch it.
I watch the stuff that goes viral. I watched it last week because they showed all of Prince's performances.
Yeah.
But it's not a it's not a show I watch from beginning to end anymore, and I haven't really done that since the 90s.
Yeah.
But Key and Peele, man, there's no bad sketches in there. Because you could tell they just cut down and cut down and cut down and cut down. You know, and they would take a five-minute idea and they'd cut it down to two. There was a sketch which we put on YouTube from their final season of Stan Lee. Stan Lee, like, pitching new characters that are all based on him being really old. And it was really funny, but it came out on YouTube first, and it was 5 minutes long. When it was on the show, it was 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, they had gone back into it after they had put it on YouTube.
And edited it.
And cut it and cut it. And they're so good at that, and I think that's where Keanu loses a little bit, is that they couldn't do that. They had to get it to 90 minutes. And there's sketches that are like, the idea is funny.
Right.
And there's jokes in it. There's literally a section in the middle of this movie where they sit around a car and wait.
Yeah.
And it's just like, as an audience member, I feel like I'm sitting around and waiting.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I think, like, that car scene's funny, getting, like, all the, I don't know,
all the gangsters to sing George Michael.
Yeah. It's like stuff like that's, like, hilarious. But it does seem like every scene was a little too long. Like, I did wait around, like, okay, when is this scene gonna end, a couple times. I thought it was
hilarious. Then there would be a great joke in there.
Oh, totally. And that's, like I said, the stuff in the scene was good, but it just seemed like everything just ran a little longer than it should have. And it's their first movie, so
And I think it's a learning curve for them, because also the director is a first time director, but it's the guy who did the show.
Oh, see, there you go.
So I admire that.
Yeah.
I admire them saying, hey, we're going to make a movie. And you know what? You're responsible for our success, because our show is so much bigger than, I mean, obviously, these Key and Peele are enormously talented and they're at the peak of their careers. But nobody cared about them when they were on Mad TV. I just told you they were on Mad TV and you didn't know.
Yeah. I didn't know where they came from, because the first thing I saw was, I don't remember what skit of theirs, but I think it was the Game of Thrones one where they were like doormen outside.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've done that a few times because they're obsessed with Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Who gets, like, almost a cameo in this.
Yeah, well, they mention him a lot.
They mention him, and he's on the movie poster.
Yeah.
When they're leaving the movie theater.
But
they also did, like, a classic one about Batman.
Right.
Which then they end by saying Ra's al Ghul is played by Liam Neeson.
Right. And it's like, you know, so they're really good. The fact that they played the villains, there's, like,
yeah, under makeup.
They looked, and it's like, they look so ridiculous. I didn't recognize it at first.
As soon as I saw their silhouettes, just the height differential.
Yeah.
Because they have that classic where Keegan's really tall and Jordan's short and stocky. We're like, when I saw them walking in, I'm like, oh, that's totally them.
That's them. Yeah, I didn't get it at first. But then when they started showing, like, how ridiculous those guys looked.
Yeah.
With, like, all black and, like, straps and, like,
long hair over their faces.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's them.
They look like Robert Rodriguez characters.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they kind of didn't fit, which was funny.
And that was kind of the fun of this movie, was that Renee and I went to see it last night, and as we were leaving, I said, well, what they tried to just to do was like make Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
They tried to make an Edgar Wright movie where they played with the genre of like the black gangster film.
Right.
They mentioned New Jack City all over the place in this. And they play NWA. So they're mentioning Straight Outta Compton. They're trying to do like the black gangster movie. And they're trying to do that as hardcore as they can.
Yeah.
And they get the Mexican cartel into it. And Luis Guzman shows up at the end of this thing.
I guess that's the stuff that I liked, is that if these guys do that genre hopping run of movies, like do a horror movie, but
and
as
they were
comedy,
and
I
they were great at that in the show, which is I think why they got Peter Atencio to do the movie. Was their Halloween episodes were scary as hell.
Yeah,
like I'll let Ben watch Key and Peele with me, because most of the time it's language or it's sexual stuff that's so innuendo that he doesn't get it. But they're really smart and they're really funny, and I want him to see the best comedy possible. But I wouldn't let him watch the Halloween episodes, because they would do a vampire sketch or they would do a zombie apocalypse sketch, and it would be dead on. And that's what they try to do in this movie.
Yeah, I remember the one they did. I think it was like a zombie thing or something. It's like them running around with the apocalypse, and it's like, it's those characters, like I said, they work so well together.
And they have such a chemistry.
Yeah, that it's like, I don't mind. I'd see them in any situation you could come up with.
Yeah, and comedy teams are so hard to work. I mean, when you talk about the great comedy teams, you're going back decades, because there hasn't really been one that's worked for a long time. There have been sketch groups that worked.
Yeah.
And then you could pair them off.
Yeah.
You know, like Dave Foley and Ken McDonald are amazing in Kids in the Hall, but they're 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
And you couldn't say they're a comedy team.
It's like David Spade and Chris Farley. It's like,
yeah, but even then, they were two guys on Saturday Night Live that made movies together. Key and Peele are clearly a team.
Yeah.
Like, there are no sketch shows based around two guys. There have been sketch shows based around one person. Amy Schumer is on right now, based around one person. Chappelle's Show is a perfect example. And there have been big groups, Monty Python, every cast of SNL. Even Mr. Show. Mr. Show was Mr. Show with Bob and David, and they just did a series this year called With Bob and David, which was great, but it was still Bob Odenkirk and David Cross with Paul F. Tompkins and Brian Posehn and Patton Oswalt and Jack Black.
Yeah,
you know, it was still that whole group. Key and Peele are a team.
It's just the two of them. Yeah,
and usually when you have a comedy team, they're kind of diluting what each other does. It's like, or like one guy's really good and he's kind of carrying the other guy.
Yeah,
those guys were so good they could switch off of being straight man, funny guy, switch those roles around and do that.
And it looked like they played around with that a lot in the movie, which is nice.
Yeah, they did, because there were certain scenarios where the one guy was more competent than the other guy.
Yeah.
And they could just totally switch it. I really enjoyed it. I was kind of going in thinking this is going to be the funniest movie, at least of the year.
Yeah.
Because I held the show in such high regards, and I think my own expectations
kind of deflated.
Were unrealistic. But this was a first film by this team. I'm hoping it does well. I want to see them do more, because I like them. I like them both individually. I like them so much together.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to break up these two
guys. They were just on The Daily Show this week.
They were on Conan, too.
Were they? Yeah. So it's like they're getting a lot of press. They're promoting it together, which is cool. It's like I said, it's nice to see the two guys like working together and everything. And they are doing separate stuff, but like I said, I'd be eager to kind of see. This is like a good first movie.
Yeah.
But it's not great. And it's like, I kind of just, it's like, give them another one.
It's like
one.
A B+.
Oh, and they set it up like there's going to be a sequel if it does well, because they're like, the cat, it's going to be a kitten forever.
Yeah, I don't see them doing a sequel. I see them doing other movies.
I'd rather see them do other movies than rehash this sequel.
Well, they have
it'll be a lot of the same, like, cat running around with, like, explosions.
Yeah, and they have a deal to do The Substitute Teacher as a movie, but I don't know how you make that 90 minutes of him, like, him calling white people by black names. I mean, those sketches are great, but I'm also not as excited about that, because those sketches are just Keegan. Like, Jordan's not even in those.
Yeah.
You know, it's Keegan with a bunch of kids, which is, like, obviously a young improv class.
Yeah.
But I want to see these guys do more stuff, and I really enjoyed this, so I recommend everybody see it.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. I also recommend you follow me on Twitter. I'm at Not In My Book. You can follow me there. That is the only Twitter feed for Caffeinated Comics. But if you want to follow Caffeinated Comics by itself, you can also follow our Facebook page, where we post videos and memes and GIFs and lots of news in between the week. And then we promote the podcast very, very hard on Mondays. And you can also listen to us on iTunes. If you don't like Apple, I have actually gotten tweets saying, hey, I don't have an Apple. I don't like iTunes. I don't have an account. Where can you listen to us? You can listen to us on Stitcher. Somebody just asked me this week, have you ever heard of Stitcher? And I said, yes, we've been on it for 3 years. So you can listen to us there, or you can go directly to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. I just sent somebody there on Twitter 2 days ago where you can listen to every episode we've ever made all the time for free. And Steven, if you want to shop with him.
Yeah, you can find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!